Hello, and welcome to Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline.
In this Back Issue Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Stumptown 1 through 4 from 2009. How you doing tonight, James?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. Now, I had not read this miniseries or anything about Stumptown before.
Me neither.
I will admit to being only passingly familiar with a lot of Rucka's non-Big 2 work.
Okay, yeah, I read his Image stuff, but beyond, I had never read his stuff at Oni before.
Well, I've got, like, the four volumes of the Queen and Country Definitive Collection, but I haven't
read that either.
Yeah, I haven't read those either.
Yeah, so I need to buy them, too, because I like him as a writer, but I just never bought any of the Oni stuff yet.
Yeah, he's a great writer and stuff, and I've been curious about some of this other work. It's just a matter of there's so much to read and so little time.
Exactly.
Now, my sister and I were curious about the Stumptown television show, because Colby Smulders was the lead and stuff. It had some other people that looked pretty good. We watched it. We enjoyed it. We've talked about it on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I wanted to read this, which is the original Stumptown miniseries, just to kind of see how much the show was and wasn't like it.
Exactly, yeah. And I'm curious as to, I can't, because I only vaguely watched maybe three episodes of the show. But was the show based on this first miniseries? Because there was like 3-year gaps between the series that he had written.
Well, not having read the others, I can't tell how much of the show may be pulling from later material beyond these first four issues of this miniseries.
Okay, yeah, because I just don't remember if the story, the plot followed this or not.
The plot from here is kind of sort of the pilot episode of the show.
Ah, okay, so I need to go watch that again then.
Yeah. A lot of what happens in these four issues is what happens in that pilot episode, and there are some differences.
Oh, okay. All right. I want to find out what those are.
Now, with this, there are a couple of storytelling techniques that I'm not crazy about.
Okay. I think I know what one of those is, but you tell me what yours is, and I'll tell you what I thought it might have been.
I'm pretty sure you're going to have gotten this in one. It's that dramatic opening followed by a, in this case, 27 hours earlier.
Yeah, that happens in a lot of TV shows, and you see it in a lot of comics. I mean, even though this was written back in, I think it was 2009, was it?
2009, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like a cliched thing almost now.
Well, yeah, and the reason writers do it, and I don't fault them for this, is if you start with something that's just kind of boring and plotting and stuff, people lose interest and they won't stick around.
Exactly. So this really catches you, you're like, boom, you know, gunshot, and what happened, you know, main character. And yeah, 27 hours earlier, and then let's figure out how we got there.
Yeah, and I get starting with that dramatic, you know, what happens here? How do we get to here, and how do they get past this?
Yes.
So two hooks for the price of taking one of your later things and just pulling it forward.
Yeah, and I see that in so many TV shows.
It's a technique that works.
It does work. So, I mean, it does work, so that's why they keep going back to the well.
Absolutely, absolutely. When my sister and I are watching TV, you get to this kind of like an opening scene, and you just know that they're going to rewind the clock and lead up to it.
Exactly.
So we're usually trying to guess, as that scene is ending, how long before that they jump to.
Yeah, I think it'll happen around the 30-minute mark.
Well, not so much the 30-minute mark, but is it a day earlier? Is it a week earlier? Is it half an hour earlier?
Oh, okay. All right. Gotcha.
Literally, what is that caption going to say of how many hours or whatever earlier?
Okay, cool.
And often we get it right. Sometimes we're a little off, but the gist is the same.
Cool.
Now, this scene that had Dill and the Whale, I think it was.
Yep, Dill and the Whale, which are such silly names, but...
Absolutely. We get a scene like that in the TV show.
Okay.
But it's very different, and it too kind of winds up leading to that climactic moment at the end of that episode.
Okay, all right. Were their names Dill and Whale in the TV show? Who knows?
I don't remember.
Not important.
Wouldn't surprise me if it was. It's interesting you mention the names, though, because some of the characters that we meet here, we see in the show,
yep.
but they're different.
Oh, okay.
Hollis, who's the guy at the casino,
okay,
looks to be African American here. He is Native American in the show.
Oh, all right. Surprising.
And Su Lin, who seems to own the casino,
yeah,
is in effectively the same position in the show, also Native American. And what's interesting is here her last name is Supa. In the show, it's Blackbird.
Oh, so they changed the last name. I wonder why. Maybe they figured that wouldn't work, Supa?
I don't know. And they cast a little bit differently for her. And it's funny because the whole Indian reservation and stuff here is almost, well, they had to put the casino somewhere.
Yeah.
In the show, it's a fairly big aspect.
Okay, so they switched it up a little bit for the TV show. And her name, the owner, I'm trying to remember it now.
Su Lin.
Su Lin, she could be Native American in here, but really they didn't do anything to make her look Native American other than maybe like, you know, the stuff on the sofa, like the blankets and things. But that could be Mexican too, but they're kind of, I guess, Native American-like.
I would argue Native American because that's where most casinos in the U.S. tend to be located.
Yeah, I would agree.
But in the show, the actress they cast is fairly thin.
Oh, and she's not thin here.
She's not particularly overweight here.
Yeah.
But she looks just a little different. And I don't remember if the actress in the show wore the glasses or not. I mean, these are minor differences, and it doesn't really impact the story either way.
Now, Dex, I would say, looks like Colby Smolder. Is that her name?
Yeah.
Yeah, looks like her.
Close enough, yeah. I mean, not like a dead ringer, but I wouldn't expect them to cast somebody based exactly on the artist's rendition. She fits the role perfectly, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
And it's interesting because when I was watching the show, I was trying to figure out, okay, where – I mean, obviously, it's based on a comic. It's based by Rucka, so they've got good source material. How much of it did they change up for the show? What did they keep the same? Where did they make some minor tweaks? And the one I was most curious about was Ansel.
Oh, okay. Was he, I guess he's autistic in here, but was he autistic? And he was autistic in the show, I think, from listening to you and Kay.
Is he autistic or does he have Down syndrome?
I don't know. He looks like Down syndrome here in the comic.
And that's what I thought for the show, too.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. Down syndrome.
And I am by no means any sort of expert in any of those sorts of things or whatever, but
me neither. I'm butchering it. But
what got me with Ansel in the comic
is
he seemed to have a little bit of either not so much a stutter, but he'd like repeat words.
Oh, and he doesn't do that in the show.
Doesn't seem to.
See, I wonder if they did that because just looking at him, I don't want it to sound bad, but you can tell that he looks a little different, abnormal. But maybe they do the stuttering to let you know there's something off about him. I hate saying that, but
well,
maybe.
Not so much off, but you know, he's got developmental challenges as would come with Down syndrome and such. And how to portray that in dialogue
is hard.
Yeah, in a word balloon, I don't know of any other way. I think Rucka took a good approach. But I also think one of the things that works so well on the show is the casting for Ansel was just really well done.
Okay. I wonder if he could have gotten the same impact across with just like a much more basic, you know, vocabulary and stuff like that. Not that it was, but I mean, but I guess the stuttering does, you know, carry it across a little bit more that there's something developmentally different.
Well, for me, one of the things that really stood out while reading this and stood out as a difference between formats, no mark on quality at all, is how much television and movies can really rely on the delivery of an actor. Whereas in the comic book, the writer really has to pick the words carefully to get certain things across.
Yeah.
And the artist really has to get some body language and some of that across.
Yeah.
And you can't get quite the same delivery on a printed page as you can in a TV show. But I can definitely see where aspects from the show were set up here.
Oh, okay, cool.
You know, and some of them are minor, and you could argue, you know, how much they pulled from it or whatever. But I can definitely see the basis of the show in this comic, and I can see, having read this comic, where somebody could say, you know what, this is a good basis for a, you know, a Private Eye kind of a television show. It's got a unique aspect to it and a unique voice to it. Let's go with that.
Yeah, and it's written well, and it doesn't look like the budget would be that large to create this for TV, which is why, you know, TV shows tend to stick around certain genres a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, they get too much into the high-tech stuff or the big cinematic things, and it's just not economically feasible to make the show. But I was surprised, and maybe it's the Oni thing, the art's a little bit rough here. It's not my typical style, but it gets the job done.
Yeah, and it's the style, because it's not an art style that I would tend to gravitate to on my own necessarily.
Yeah.
But it's a solid artist. He does good on the panel layouts, the acting within the scenes. It's a, I guess, a looser style than I tend to care for.
Yeah, it's very loose, but I almost wonder if Rucka gave him direction on where he wanted the camera angle and what he wanted shown in that scene, because the angles are pretty spot on to show things. And I don't know how much of that art is artist, how much is writer, but so even though the art style is not my type, I think the angles were there to show what needs to be shown for each one of the scenes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, clearly some of this could have been in the script. Some of it may not have been. It's without seeing the script, it's hard
to
know.
Who knows? Yeah.
But I think both Rucka and the artist were mentally on the same page, because I never felt like Rucka had to put something into the dialogue to cover for the art.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
And the art, you know, again, I would have loved to have had, you know, like a George Perez or you know, Jose Luis Garcia Lopez kind of, you know, really crisp art or something. But this guy does a great job. He uses interesting angles, and it feels cinematic without being kind of overblown and overly stylized.
That's exactly the way I describe it. It's very cinematic, but and yet at the same time very abstract and scratchy, you know, a lot of just abstract, I would guess you would say cinematic. Well, and abstract at the same time.
I don't know if I'd go with abstract, because I think there's a lot of detail in there. The buildings seem to have a solid kind of geometry to them and stuff. In other words, the guy knows his perspective and camera angles and stuff like that. And there are some panels where we get a little more detail on the faces and stuff like that. Others where they're a little further back, so not so much.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
But it's not one of those where I feel like they've implied the story. I think the artist is actually showing it.
I agree. Yeah, so I was at the beginning, I was like, oh, this isn't good. I mean, it's not that it's bad. I'm just like, oh, this is not what I'm used to. But as I went along, it didn't take me out of it. And actually, he conveyed what he needed to for the story to be coherent and actually read just like a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I appreciated.
Yeah, I can definitely see somebody picking this up and being able to envision the show.
Yeah, he made the director's job very easy.
Yeah. Now, there were a couple of other things that I found surprisingly different between the comic and the show.
Okay.
Here, Dex is already a private investigator when the comic starts.
Okay, so that's not the case in the show.
No, in the show, one of the early arcs is her getting her license.
Ah, okay. All right, gotcha. So, yeah, here she's definitely involved, and she's getting hired from the jump.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she was hired by Su Lin in the comic of, you have the skills, you can do this, and I need this done. But then there's an aspect where if you're going to keep doing this, she had to get the license.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it's one thing to clear a debt. It's another thing to do it as a profession.
Exactly.
Now, some of that could have been that they realized, well, we've got a season to fill, so let's start maybe, I don't say a little further back, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, they flesh it out a little bit more. When you want to get to like 20 whatever episodes, yeah, you can fill in a lot more backstory, more characterization, more how she got here, stuff like that. That in four issues, you can't do.
Yeah, well, and again, this is the equivalent of either a pilot episode of a TV show or, you know, a movie or something.
Yeah.
And I think the first season for Stumptown went like 18 episodes. So they had a lot more time there than obviously a 4-issue miniseries is going to have.
I would agree.
When we get to the second issue, we introduce Hoffman.
Hoffman, yeah.
And she's a fairly different character here.
Oh, okay. How is she different?
One, it's a she, not a he.
Okay.
Two, she's Caucasian, African-American in the show.
Oh.
Michael Ealy plays Miles Hoffman in the show versus Tracy Hoffman here.
So completely different.
And Dex already knows Hoffman.
Oh, all right. Whereas
in the show, she's gotten assaulted. She's in the ambulance, you know, at the scene. Hoffman's the cop on duty. That's how they meet.
Oh, all right. All right. So completely different there.
But similar in so much as her using Hoffman for favors definitely happens later in the show.
Okay, that makes sense. All right.
So I can see where they may have decided, hey, let's change some stuff up to get some different character dynamics. Or maybe Rucka said, hey, I did it this way, but if I had it to do today, I'd do it differently. Or they were casting for Hoffman and they opened it to both genders and different people, and this was the guy who nailed the role.
This is what we're going with.
I don't know how it got from here to there. Both work.
Now, were the people like the Hector Marenko, I guess it is, and Isabel and Oscar, are those all the same in the TV show, the in that pilot or whatever?
The girl that she's looking for, Sulin's granddaughter, is
Charlotte?
Charlotte is pretty much the same.
Okay, Charlotte's the same, all right.
The rest of how that plotline plays out?
Yeah.
Different.
Oh, all right. Because I found the interplay in the family. What was weird is I liked the book. I really did. But the family dynamic seemed a little cliched for me. I know that seems weird, but like, you know, the son trying to, you know, father's approval, the daughter, you know. Never getting anything from the father because she's not a woman and not a man. So that just, I feel like I've read that before, but you know, I've seen and read a lot of stuff. So, but I didn't like the way that played out, but I liked it overall how it ended up.
Yeah. The whole way the case kind of ends in the show is fairly different. And I'm not going to say it's less cliche there, but differently cliche.
All right.
But I mean, let's face it. There have been a bazillion hours of private eye drama on television, in movies, and in comics.
There's only so much stuff you can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's true. It's, you know, you see the son who's the screw up, who's trying to win the father's approval, the daughter who really is maybe not as much of a screw up, but because she's not a man, you know, type of thing. And I just feel like I've seen that. But at the same time, like you said, there's only so much you can do. So it's cool. It's not done poorly. But I was just, you know, watching the interplay. I was like, huh, I feel like I've read that before.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. But I don't think this comic is really about the case.
I agree.
The case is there as a vehicle to show the PI.
Yeah, to build up this character, her background, who she is, how she interacts with people. And I find Dex quite interesting, you know, from her, you know, how she uses sex. And there's no sex in here, just sexualization in general, how she's smart, how she's tough, how she's not very feminine, but is feminine at the same time. I just find her an interesting character. I like her.
Yeah, she's like a lot of PIs where she's got the quirks where she needs them.
Yeah, exactly. So he built a good character, and I think that's what that case was built around, just to showcase her as a centerpiece going forward.
Yeah, yeah. What did you think of Gray?
Of Gray? I'm trying to remember. Gray. Who's Gray?
He's the one who comes in to keep an eye on
Ansel. Okay, I felt like that was weird. Is that supposed to be a love connection?
The second or third episode of the show goes into the backstory between Gray and Dex.
Okay, because I didn't know what I was supposed to be reading into that, and I didn't know if it was supposed to be like, a seeded love interest for future episodes or stories that are coming out, because I like the character. I don't know if it's still the same sex in the TV show.
It is. It is.
Okay, but they seemed nice. They seemed like there's some underlying, maybe potential issues there, some stuff that's not coming to the surface, some ulterior motives. That's what I felt.
I took him in this series as like a cameo or a guest star or kind of a side character.
Okay, yeah, that's because there wasn't much of them.
No, he's basically there to keep an eye on Ansel. There's a backstory there, and that's all we really know about him.
Yeah, I thought it was seated in there for maybe a future love interest because he seemed, you know, for me to go over and watch your kid time to time and be interested in you, it's not something I really want to do. I know this sounds horrible, but if I was, unless there's some kind of interest there beyond, maybe that's what I was reading into it, that he was doing it because maybe he liked her. So I saw it as maybe a potential love interest, but maybe we didn't get that far.
I think that's a fair take. And there was a scene, I forget which issue it was in, where she comes back. He's like, I can stay. She's like, no, it's fine. You can leave.
That's why I was, yeah, exactly. He's wanting to stay. He's wanting the invitation. And she's more like, you're a friend, you know, and she's totally friend zoned this guy and he's trying to break through. That's the way I read it.
Yeah. In the show, he's a major character.
Oh, okay, because we didn't get much of him at all.
No.
That's why when you said Gray, I'm like, who's Gray? Is that? And then you told me the guy who watched the kid, I'm Ansel. I'm like, oh, that guy.
In the show, he's the one who's got the bar, the bad alibi.
Okay.
He's definitely keeping an eye on Ansel at times. There's definitely a history to the relationship between him and Dex that they go into fairly quickly in the show, the second or third episode. And it really puts things into a fun dynamic for the rest of the season.
Oh, okay. We didn't get any of that here.
And in the show, he even gets his own little side plot lines and stuff like that.
Oh, and for him to be just such a minuscule character where basically we only had a few pages of him and that he was gone.
Yeah.
In the four issues.
I'm curious if we get more of him in later series.
Yeah, maybe he became important in the other series that came out 3 years later.
Yeah, because there was another series that went, 10 issues or something, and then another maybe 5-issue miniseries?
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know what happens in those, if he becomes a bigger character, if he gets the bar there or not. But I would say in the show, the three main characters, obviously Dex, you got Miles Hoffman, and you've got Gray.
Yep. Okay.
You know, obviously Ansel's there, who's, you know, more supporting cast member. He's a major character there in the show too. He's just so well used there because there's stuff Ansel can just kind of say or do or just cast that look at the other character of disapproving or you're going to do something bad or, you know, whatever.
That's
hard to come across in a comic.
Yeah. So I'm actually interested to go back and watch the pilot again, because like I was telling you, we chit-chatted a little bit before we started recording. I had the show on and my wife was watching it. She's like, I'm bored because she doesn't like Private Eye stuff and I'm not that much into it. But I was kind of reading comics during it and I'd chime in, you know, 10, 15 minutes into the show. What's going on here? And my wife's at that time started reading a magazine, so she doesn't really know. So we were both kind of lost through the whole thing.
Yeah, well, when I watch TV, I watch TV.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that. It's actually a better use of your time.
Well, either do it or don't, you know, and there's nothing right or wrong either way, but...
Yeah, I try to multitask and do everything, and none of it works out.
Yeah. So the other character that was in here, and I don't know if he shows up more later, is Voke. Seems to be the guy in charge at the police station.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I called him the captain.
I don't know that he was clearly identified as such.
Exactly. In my notes, I just wrote down the captain, but I put down some notes on him. But Voke, so yeah, that's him.
Yeah, and definitely backstory there with Dex having apparently broken up his marriage.
Yeah, that was like, I want to know more about that, because they didn't go into it here, but they alluded to it. And I guess we had to wait 3 years to find out what happened Did they talk on the TV show about that, or?
He doesn't show up there. It's Lieutenant Cosgrove who's in charge of the police station. Lieutenant or captain, whatever.
So he's not even in the TV show?
Nope.
That seems such an interesting dynamic, because he literally walks in, what's she doing here, and proceeding to kick her out of the police department after something had happened to her. She's lodging a complaint. But to find out, and what she, you know, what she responds with, you know, breaking up their marriage, I'm like, oh, that was rough. And even everyone else was like, you got to leave, you know?
Yeah.
That I want to know that story. What happened there? I'm like, I just don't know.
Well, in the show, we get Cosgrove, who's played by Cameron Manheim, who was in The Practice. I forget what else. Great actress. Does a terrific job with the role in a very different dynamic between her and Dex.
Ah.
You know, because, well, there's not the whole breaking up of the marriage thing.
Exactly. So that's interesting, because I thought that was gave this such a layer of depth that I wanted to know so much more about. So now I'm curious if the comic picks up referencing anything in here, any of this stuff.
You can't do this kind of a scene with Volk and not pick up on it later.
You have to, because now he's piqued my interest. I need to know what happened, how it happened.
At some point, he needs to be in a position where he has to ask Dex for help.
Yeah.
Because it's set up to where it's like, there's no way he'd ever do that. So, of course, he needs to.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at that page right now. He's like, you're breaking up another marriage. Volk says that. And she's like, no, I stopped that doing that after yours, Volk. And everyone's like, oh, Jesus, Dex. They're just like all like in shock.
But he's again, just
like, get out.
That's the thing with Dex, is she may have actually meant that as having felt guilty for the what happened.
Based on her personality. But the way she said it, and everyone just gravitating toward that conversation because their voices are elevated. And you can just see that by the bodies. They're not saying that. They're not making the dialogue boxes any bigger. That's like a big impactful thing where I'm like, oh, I got to know what's going on. I got to know how this happened.
Well,
he's really hurt. He's feeling it.
Yeah, that's where I felt the artist did a terrific job, particularly on that last panel on that page, which is borderless, goes into the gutters or whatever, no background.
Yeah.
And everybody is kind of centered in on that conversation, you know, with Hoffman of just, geez, you know, Dex, you did it again kind of attitude.
Yep.
The body language in that was just really well done.
It spoke volumes. And like I said, most people, they would have the text dialogue boxes really big to convey shouting, but they didn't do it. But I still knew they were shouting and that they were getting everyone's attention. And that was pretty cool. I like that. Thumbs up there.
Very effective storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm curious, you know, why they made the change from the comic to the show. Neither, I'm not saying one's a right choice or a bad choice or whatever, but I was, again, that's part of why I wanted to read this, is they liked it enough to turn it into a TV show, yet they made some pretty serious changes to it in a few places.
That's bizarre. Yeah, it makes me wonder why, you know, why.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily bizarre, because I think there are certain things that you could realize if we go this way, it's going to seem cliche, or, you know, what worked 10 years ago may not work now, or we've got a better idea, or we've got this opportunity to pull this person in who'd be great, but that means, you know, changing up this role.
Yeah, exactly.
So to me, it's the property is still recognizable between the two incarnations.
But different.
But different.
All right. Do you have a preference yet? Or am I spoiling the end of our conversation? did you, so far, TV show, comic, which way would you lean if you had to choose one?
Well, I'm a little biased towards the show because I watched that before reading this.
Okay.
So that was kind of my original material for this, backwards though that may be. And there's an aspect where the chemistry between the actors, because I think they just had a terrific cast for the show, that between the relationship between Gray and Ansel, I think is great. Between Gray and Dex is great. Between Gray and Hoffman is a lot of fun because of Hoffman's relationship with Dex.
Yeah.
You know, they get some very interesting kind of triangles there. And there's a few other characters that they introduce that that really add to the flavor of the show. So part of it, though, is having watched 18 episodes of the show versus this four-issue miniseries, which is literally the rough equivalent of the pilot episode.
Just not the same amount of material and not as much depth here because of that.
Well, and there were things they set up in the pilot episode of the show, like the bar and some other stuff, that they didn't set up here, but they may not have thought they were going to do more with this property afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, with four issues, they Rucka came out with this. He probably just did it as a one-off, and maybe it sold well enough and he went back to it, or, you know, we just don't know. You know, who knows?
Well, and it also comes down to what else was he doing at the time.
Yeah, he might have been doing some DC work or something.
Yeah, because when New 52 came along in 2011, I think he was doing Wonder Woman for a while.
Yep.
Or was that later? I forget. But, you know, at one point he was doing Gotham Central. He's done a ton. So maybe he just didn't have time for this. I don't know. But
yeah.
There were aspects of the comic I really enjoyed. I thought the case and how it played out, be it cliche, it was a little bit more involved than I recall that first episode's stuff being.
Okay.
But the first episode, they had a few things. She's got the same basic car. I'm not a car guy, so I don't know how different they are. In the show, it's a junker, and it's got this bit with the tape deck that's like stuck in there. And you go over a bump, and suddenly it kicks in an appropriate song for the soundtrack.
That's awesome.
So it's got a bit of a shtick there or whatever that obviously isn't in the comic and would be really hard to pull off in the comic.
Yeah.
But that was one of the things that was kind of fun with the pilot. And also with the pilot, they did a couple of things. You know how like in the Dukes of Hazzard, they do the jump over the gorge and they'd cut for the commercial break?
Yeah.
They actually did something very much like that in the pilot episode.
Oh, really?
But when it did that cut, that's when they did the Stumptown logo for the opening credits.
Oh, interesting. I like that.
So at that point, they were also kind of turning the image into almost like a comic art kind of a look with like a Photoshop filter effect.
Really
cool.
And that's
something they kind of pulled back on. Because, yeah, this is based on a comic, but in the TV landscape, it's just another PI show.
Yeah. And I think her car, it's like an old Mustang. Looks like a late 60s, early 70s Mustang, it looks like.
Yeah. And the other thing that they'd set up in the comic, or not in the comic, in the show that I haven't seen here in the comic, is she definitely has PTSD in the show.
Oh, she does?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. That didn't come across in here.
And that's something that, as, you know, part of the arc of the season, plays out.
Ah, all right. Now you're making me curious. I want to actually watch the show again. Like I said, we stopped recording after three episodes because we were both kind of like, we're into that mode where just like with my my comics, I was overwhelmed. We were recording things off live TV and my DVR was kind of filling up. And I'm just like, and we were traveling at the time. I'm like, man, this doesn't catch my interest. I'm off. I'm just deleting it. I was just canceling everything. But now it's like as I move more towards maybe I'm going to cut the cord and just go, streaming. I have time to just focus on this thing, you know, this one thing and not worry about what's coming out on my DVR.
Well, let me ask you this. Did you like the miniseries?
I did. It's not my – this genre is not my go-to. You know, if I'm looking for, something to pick up, I don't normally go to police procedurals or detective things. But Greg Rucka – that name, I know it's going to be done well, and I read this, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun.
What were the aspects you enjoyed, given that you're not much for kind of the detective genre or whatever?
I really liked Dex. I really liked some of the underlying story threads, even though we didn't touch on them, like the thing about marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I liked her as a character, her personality. I liked some of the twists they had in there, even though I knew there was going to be a twist. I liked how they played out. And I think it was more just the main character, Dex. I felt like connected to her. I felt like it's someone I enjoyed.
I would say definitely check out the show because she's kind of dysfunctional here.
That's what I liked about her.
She's very dysfunctional in the show.
Okay.
And watching her go through the journey of, you mean I could get paid doing this private investigator thing? Oh.
Made it kind of cool.
Oh, wait, I've got to get a license to do this private investigator thing?
It's just kind of fun.
You know, and the way they develop these characters and the positions they have them kind of orbit each other in is a lot of fun, because with this, it's all about the case and stuff like that, which is cool. But by introducing, and we get a little of the home life for Dex and Ansel.
Yeah. But by just a little bit.
Yeah. By introducing the bar in the show, which is where Gray lives, we get his world. We also have the police station for Hoffman and Cosgrove. We get a little of that here, but again, only tangentially. Well, the story calls for her to go to the police station, so we're going to have a police station kind of thing. And they also have another character, Tuki, in the show that is really just a fun character. He's one that knew Dex before her parents left.
Okay.
And her parents didn't factor into this at all. They're clearly not around. She's got to keep an eye on her younger brother, Ansel. That's all we know.
Okay. You know what's interesting is I like the characters Whale and Dylan, I guess his name were.
Dill, or whatever his name.
I like them a little bit more. They came off very true to who they should be, more than the main, you know, antagonist. The family dynamics of the, what are they, Marinos? Or, no, I can't remember their last name right now. Marinko.
Yeah.
Those people, I'm like, I like the girl in that family, but the son, I did not like him at all. And the father was kind of like, I could go either way, you know, give or take. But I did like the girl in the family. She was kind of cool.
The way they Isabel. Use Dill and the Whale was really fun in the show. They're used in the same narrative position, but a bit more comedically and entertainingly. And the Marinkos, I'm trying to remember if they really factored in at all. Certainly not in the way they do here.
Okay, just set pieces. They're just.
I'm not even sure that Sulin's granddaughter ran off for the same reason.
Oh, okay. All right.
It plays out very differently. There's not kind of the showdown, the bit at the beginning where she's shot and, oh, you know, does she survive or whatever, doesn't happen as such in the show.
Okay.
But there's an equivalent scene that, again, was fun.
All right, cool.
So I think if you like this, it's definitely worth checking out the show. Again, there's a couple of things where the show, I think, has a little bit more tools to play with soundtrack, with timing, with delivery, with, I think, a really great cast. But I can definitely see where they pulled a lot of the material, either directly or at least thematically, from the comic here, and they had strong roots to pull from.
Yeah, I agree.
Because about the only thing I didn't care for here, and I don't know how it would have played in 2009, but in, I think it was the fourth episode, Dex is talking to, who the hell is she talking to? It was basically about how horrible her life is, and how she's got to keep an eye on her brother and all this stuff. And she refers to him as mentally retarded.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised about that part. Is that meant to show how crass she is? you think her having a brother like that, she would not use that word?
Yeah.
Because, like, I have, not Down syndrome, but I have someone who worked in my office who her little brother was autistic.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just like, and if you said the word retard, she would get all kinds of offended. Don't say that. And I'm like, oh, so, well, sorry. But I was just kind of surprised. Like, yeah, she seemed a little cold towards her brother.
She wasn't doing it in his presence, at least.
Yeah, that's true. but that did come off. That was one thing. I'm glad you brought it up, because I had written that down in my notes. I just forgot to read it there.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where that was. And I don't know, again, if it was just the terminology has changed over the intervening decade or what.
It probably has. It's something now that's, if I think back, you know, 17 years ago to 2003. No, this is 2009, so 11 years ago. Maybe it wasn't a big deal. I don't know. Things change so quick.
There wasn't the sensitivity or whatever, because, I mean, something like Down syndrome or autism or something like that, there are certain things where people are literally genetically, physically challenged in ways other people are not.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, we're all in that position.
Yeah, I agree.
I worked with some people who were literally, you know, built like football players. In one case, actually had been a college football player, a pretty big team or whatever. I would never fit in that category. I am physically challenged in that respect. I'm going to blame genetics. You know, and it's one of those things that to belittle people for that is not cool.
Yes.
And while Dex in this comic is messed up, that's something that, again, I don't think it was meant as any kind of a dig or being insensitive or anything of the sort. I was surprised it was in there.
Me too. It just, that part felt a little grating and not what I would expect her to say about her little brother. So I was just like, wow, huh, interesting. I mean, and like I said, I didn't take offense to it personally, but maybe somebody would. But I just thought it came off like she didn't care for him as much as she should, or I think she does.
It felt a little out of character.
Yes.
It didn't seem like how she would think of Ansel.
Exactly.
And again, I think the way Ansel is used in the show is just really a ton of fun to watch. I think, again, the actor does a great job. They give him a lot to work with, and I think he gives the other people in the show a lot to work with, too.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I did enjoy this. It made me want to maybe read those other issues, or the, I guess they'd be trade paperbacks now of that he did in Stumptown. And it got me interested to maybe go back and watch the show.
Well, I had read this one, the trade or whatever, on Kindle Unlimited.
And okay.
It's free on Kindle Unlimited if you've got it.
I read it digitally too.
And volume 2 is, I think, $1.99 on Kindle. Volume 3 is also $1.99. And I don't know if volume 4, which is what I think covers the third miniseries, I don't think that's on Kindle yet.
Okay.
But
all right. See,
I enjoyed this. I'm considering, do I want to get the trades or not?
Yeah, that's what I'm – it pushed me. Like I said, this is not my go-to, but I like Rucka enough where I'm like, I enjoy it enough to where I'm considering picking up the trades. If I see them solicited again in previews, I'll probably pick them up. And I'm – with the TV series, even though – was that canceled or is it still going?
It's got a second season.
Okay, so it's coming out. Okay. I wouldn't be surprised if he revisits it, writes some more stuff for it, and maybe they do a big hardcover of this, of all the material. I wouldn't be surprised.
Wouldn't surprise me at all either.
Yeah, so I'm kind of holding out because I think that's coming. and I like hardcovers. I'm just kind of addicted to that format.
Yes. You must have strong bookcases.
No, I have stacks that I could kill my cats with. I'm actually going to pick up some bookcases. I have to because the stacks are just not doing it.
That's funny. Now, one thing I'll say about this is these issues were a bit longer than typical.
I would agree.
And it gave the issues a little more space for the story.
Yep.
And while they were chapters of a story, which not the least bit surprising for a four-issue miniseries, they didn't feel the least bit light or hollow, and they really felt like they had a fuller read to them. They did a pretty good job of balancing this is part of a bigger story, but as a single issue, it had some serious meat to it.
I agree. Had some serious meat. It's Greg Rucka. If you like his writing, you'll like this. I wouldn't say this is the best Greg Rucka I've ever read, but it was fun. And I like the character. I want more. And for it to not be in my genre, in my wheelhouse, and me to want more, it speaks volumes for the book.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. I think it was good stuff.
The TV show, where did you watch that? Was it a streaming service, or did you have it recorded on your DVR?
It was on the DVR. I'm trying to remember if it was an ABC show, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I can't remember.
I am not sure if it's on one of the streaming services yet or not. I would imagine it is, but I don't know.
There's so many of them that I'm sure it's streaming somewhere.
I can never keep track of what the hell I watched something on, if it was a streaming service, the DVR, or which network or whatever it's airing on. There's just – when it was ABC, CBS, NBC, it wasn't too hard, or Fox, or WB, or whatever, or CW. Not too bad. But now that you've got, you know, stuff happening on Hulu, you know, Netflix, Disney Plus, DC Universe. I mean, there's an infinite number of these things.
Oh, yeah. I have Comcast Xfinity, and I get Peacock for free. I'm like, I didn't even know there was a Peacock, but I get Peacock. And they have their own original programming, which I'm like, it's so bizarre because Comcast is the cable company. They own the network, and they have shows that they're just releasing on the streaming service. So I'm like, I don't know. It's just bizarre to me. It's like I have to go here for this show and there for that show. It's just, I get lazy at times.
Yeah.
To track it all down, I'm like, this is confusing.
It's hard to keep track of it all.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is one that I do think you should check out the show. You said you didn't think this was Rucka's best work. What do you think is?
Actually, my favorite one, I'm trying to remember the one he did with Lark, Lazarus.
Ah, I can see that. I can see that.
And that's because that's in my wheelhouse. I'm not. That's why I'm saying this is not bad. I liked his Wonder Woman, which he did in Rebirth. Mm-hmm. It was the Rebirth, not the New 52. I remember you saying that earlier. I like that. But Lazarus was my favorite comic, and I need to pick up the hardcovers of that. I didn't. I bought all the single issues, and now they're coming out with those quarterly trades or whatever. They've kind of disappeared now. But it's just I really like that protagonist. I like the setting with like the almost like an end of the world apocalypse, even though it's not the end of the world. It's more just like a dystopian future where the corporations take over and run the countries.
Yeah.
So I just love that. That's right in my wheelhouse. I'm like, I love this.
No, that's solid stuff. I would have to say for me, and I have to give it some more thought to really think through all the stuff of his I've read. He had done a run of Wonder Woman before Flashpoint and all that stuff, where she was an ambassador and stuff, and just did some great stuff. Did an issue where Lois Lane interviews her that I thought was just terrific.
Oh, and you want to know, I know Eric from Cowabunga Comic, his favorite one, because he said it on our book club, is actually Black Magic.
I can new see one that.
Have you been reading Black Magic?
I have, and I enjoyed Before the Hiatus better than the issue that came out after.
Yeah, well, there's like a 2.5 year break there.
It was hard to get back into the story.
Yeah, I thought he'd at least put a blurb catching up, but oh no, we're right in there.
Now, the other question on Greg Rucka material is, do you want to do some of those other trades?
I would love it. I'd love to do Lazarus, and I'd love to do maybe some of his Wonder Woman stuff, and I'm cool with Black Magic, too, because he is one of the premier writers. I love him. So if you want to review any of those things, I'm completely on board.
How about more Stumptown?
More Stumptown? I'm on board with that, too, because I would love to do the rest of it. We could do the next volume and then volume after that. I would really enjoy it.
Okay. We'll put those on the list to do. We'll figure out what order and stuff.
Yeah. It gives me a reason to read it. Even though I planned on reading it anyways, it gives me a reason to read it maybe a little earlier than I would have.
Well, yeah. I'm curious how much of some of the stuff that was set up here, like Vogue and whatever, plays out later, how much of what else is in the show comes in there later, or if they diverge further.
Yeah. That sounds like a plan. Let's put that in the, In the shooter, we'll go ahead and get that ready to go. And I know we have something else scheduled, the Why the Last Man, but maybe after that we can revisit Stumptown.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, awesome.
Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool. The September previews comes out on August 26th, so the preview spotlight deadline for September is going to be Saturday morning, September 5th, bright and early that morning. Please send in clips. These episodes live or die based on your input. It's a great way to share your love of comics and to highlight the stuff you enjoy so other people pick it up and it sells better and it sticks around. And right now, the creators could use your help, the titles could use your help, the stores could use your help. So let's get some people excited about some comics. So once again, the preview spotlight deadline for September 2020 is Saturday morning, September 5th. And a quick reminder that we've also got the recommendation roundtable episodes going. The point of those episodes is to help people find other ways to spend their time. So send in pics of comic books, either older ones, back issues, trades, whatever, novels, television shows, movies, video games, if there's a board game you think people might really enjoy or something. Let's get that out there. We've got a lot of ways we can spend our time in helping people find things that they might be interested in. It's just a great thing to do. I've gotten a lot of clips from Billy Hogan. I want to thank him for that. It reminded me that I should really go reread Astro City and put a few other things kind of back on my radar, including a couple of novels he recommended. I've added those to my reading list. We'll see when I get to them. But we've got no deadline for these episodes.
the way these episodes work is you send in one clip per pick, and that could be a particular book or video game or TV show, or it could be a series of books, anything that's kind of a unified thing. And when I get enough of those clips, I'll string them together, I'll kick out an episode. So that means if I get tons of clips, like when Billy sent me about, I don't know, an hour and 45 minutes of some great clips, that was enough for me to get two episodes put together, about an hour for one and about 45 minutes or so for the other. So that's what episodes 2 and 3 are. But if I don't get clips, it may be a while before that next episode comes out. And the reason I'm doing this is there are a lot of things hitting, like the streaming services and stuff like that, on not really a set cadence like we've got for the preview spotlight. So if you wake up one morning and say, you know what, there's a bunch of stuff I think people might enjoy, spend a few minutes, send in the clips, they get in the queue. And if it's another few months before you do the next one, that's great. But hopefully we have enough people sending in clips on a regular enough basis that we can be putting one of these episodes out every month, every other month, or something like that. So once again, the point here is just to recommend older comic books, novels, television shows, movies, video games, or anything else that doesn't really fit the format of the preview spotlight, but that you really want to kind of share your love of and encourage other people to check out. So once again, there's no deadline on those recommendation roundtable clips. It's an open invitation for everybody at all times. So please send in clips when you've got something you're thinking about and share the love. Join us next week as Sam and I take a look at the first half of the New Teen Titans Volume 1 trade paperback, covering the preview of the New Teen Titans from DC Comics Presents number 26, I think it was, and issues 1 through 4 of the original series. And then in 2 weeks, when James and I come back for the monthly comics spotlight number 2, covering the comics we got in August 2020, and then in 3 weeks, when James and I talk about Why the Last Man number 1 through 5.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.